This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media Medical News Network. We're about to speak to Wesley Smith, who's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. Welcome back to Utopia Media Medical News Network.
Well, thanks for having me.
Before we get started, why don't we talk about terminology? I've been reading a report from 2002 by the President's Council on Bioethics in which they make the argument that it would be a good idea to substitute for the terms therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning, the terms cloning for biomedical research and cloning for reproductive purposes.
Cloning to produce children.
Cloning to produce children. Would you go along with that as a fair and accurate way to distinguish between the two kinds of cloning?
Yeah, it is well, there aren't two kinds of cloning. We're talking
right,
about...
Right, the two intentions, yes, exactly.
Yeah, we're talking about different uses for the clone
exactly,
that
right.
has been created.
Right.
I think that would have been fair. That was in their first report called The Human Cloning and Human Dignity.
Right.
Unfortunately, it was this terminology was completely ignored and has not been used in the popular press at all.
Well, we're trying to be both popular and accurate here
right.
at Utopia Media Medical News Network, and we'd like to spread that. Tell us those two terms again.
There's the President's Council suggested that when you're using the product of the embryos created in clones,
or by the process of somatic cell nuclear transfer,
right? And they suggested that these be called cloned embryos,
right?
And that was unanimous, by the way, in terms of the terminology. There was a difference in the council at that time between whether or not to have a moratorium on all cloning or merely to outlaw reproductive cloning. There was a split on that issue.
Right.
But as to the proper terminology, both people who supported cloning for research and those who opposed it agreed that it is really crucial that we have an agreed-upon lexicon so we can engage in a morally serious discussion about these issues.
Right.
And that's the one thing that the biotech industry has refused to permit.
All right, well, let's ignore their wishes on this now.
Yep.
and tell all of our listeners that there's only one kind of cloning, which is created by somatic cell nuclear transfer, which you've very clearly explained in all your articles, and which I try to do the same. And the difference, even in therapeutic and so-called therapeutic and so-called reproductive cloning, is the intent or the purpose to which those clones are put once the embryonic clones or cloned embryos are put.
Right. Once the cloning act is completed,
right.
the somatic cell nuclear transfer,
right.
there are no further acts of cloning.
Right.
After that, the only question is, what do we do with this nascent human life that we have created? We have created this human life asexually. That is, we have not joined sperm and egg, but we have done so through the somatic cell nuclear transfer process, which was how Dolly the Sheep came into being.
Right. But we should add, for all of our listeners, that nascent human, the label you've given to that cloned embryo, nascent human, the category you've put it in, the way you've characterized it as nascent human life,
right.
is itself the subject of some dispute, I would say, among proponents and opponents of cloning for biomedical research.
Right, because what happened was, early on in the dispute, in the debate, the biotech industry, the National Academy of Science types and so forth, admitted that what was created in cloning was an embryo. In the United Kingdom, where there isn't a real controversy over this, they still admit it. But what happened, because of the political debate, the scientists here in this country began to change definitions and began to obfuscate terms and basically started pushing junk biology. So now we are told that a cloned embryo isn't really an embryo because there's no sperm involved. Which is just garbage, because if we're not really an embryo, then why would they say we shouldn't permit implantation, since if you just took cells and implanted cells in a uterus, you could do that for a million years and never result in a baby.
The only thing that results in a baby is an embryo.
That's correct. And where do you get embryonic stem cells? You get them from embryos.
Right. Well, in fact, in Proposition 71, and one of the passages in it, reproductive cloning is outlawed, but somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is place referred to as cloning, is legalized and funded.
Well, that's just the usual, typical semantic game that is being played today to keep the American people from having a meaningful and informed moral debate on these issues.
Okay.
Frankly, the failure and refusal of the biotech promoters to agree to lexicon and to agree to what is accomplished when cloning is finished is disrespectful of democracy. They don't want the American people to have a full understanding of what happens in cloning, because they're worried that if they do, the American people will turn away from their moral perspective.
Okay, now one of the leaders in the fight against cloning is President Bush,
right,
who made a comment at his photo op on Friday, I think it was, that he opposes cloning and is afraid of a world in which cloning is accepted, but I didn't hear from him a clear distinction between these different intentions for cloning, because he doesn't believe there's any difference in the moral attributes of either one.
Correct.
And that they both ought to be treated the same way, which is to say disallowed.
Correct. President Bush's position is you should not create human life through cloning for any reason. So there is no need to make a distinction
between
therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so let's do one, before we get on to some other things, let's go on one more time as to what everyone ought to be able to use as the correct terms for the different kinds of cloning.
As far as I'm concerned, if people want to use therapeutic cloning or reproductive cloning, I don't care, so long as they understand that it's not two different kinds of cloning, but different uses for cloned human life.
Right.
If you want to use cloning for biomedical research or cloning for to produce children,
right,
I don't care, as long as you understand that the issue isn't different types of cloning, it's different uses for human lives created through cloning.
Okay, we got that. You've obviously been paying attention to what the Koreans have just announced by way of the... they did somatic cell nuclear transfer. They engaged in human cloning for biomedical research.
Correct.
Slash human cloning for... or human therapeutic cloning.
Correct.
What's your take on that, and what do you think that means now for the current state of debate and the current political maneuvering and activity that's going on, and particularly in Washington, with bills ranging from Senator Brownback's to ban both forms of human cloning to the, if I can get it right, Kennedy, Harkin, Feinstein, Specter, Hatch bill to allow it and pay for it?
Well, the what I call the Hatch-Feinstein bill,
right,
would actually legalize human cloning. It calls itself a cloning ban, but this is just part of the misinformation campaign, the incredible propaganda blitz that the pro-cloning forces use. To call a something that explicitly permits creating human life through somatic cell nuclear transfer a cloning ban is to misstate and completely engage in 1984 type of newspeak.
Now, I noticed that any effort to further therapeutic or cloning for biomedical research always prefaces itself by saying we want to ban human reproductive cloning or cloning for making children.
Well, they often
they almost always do that.
Well, they often almost say we want to ban human cloning. And they do that by, in the legislation, redefining cloning away from the biological definition, which is the creation of the embryo through the somatic cell nuclear transfer process,
right,
to something like implanting. But implanting the embryo is not the act of cloning.
Right. So you're saying that what they're doing either...
political definitions of cloning rather than biological definitions of cloning.
And in fact, this is kind of... these are sort of clones, if you'll pardon the expression, of what was done in Proposition 71 that says cloning is reproductive cloning, and therapeutic or cloning for biomedical research is not cloning. It's somatic cell nuclear transfer or some kind of biomedical research, but it's not cloning.
Sometimes it's just stem cell research. That's precisely what's going on. They're using different terms for the same biological act of creating a mammal life asexually, in this case a human mammal.
Right. Okay. So
it's really disrespectful of democratic processes to do that, because it is intended to keep people from understanding what is going on rather than letting them understand it so that they can come up with an informed moral position.
Okay. What's your informed moral position on the proper disposition of so-called surplus embryos created ostensibly for the purpose of fertility treatments or for giving birth to children on the part of the women who were involved, that are now frozen, hundreds of thousands, presumably. You can give me your figure on that, that exist around the United States in clinics now that are frozen. What's the ethical thing, in your view, to be done with them?
That's a tough question. And it strikes me that using those embryos for as a natural resource in experimentation,
right,
transforms human life from a subject into an object, basically into a natural resource, into a commodity to be harvested.
All right. Well,
I think that it isn't so much in that situation. It isn't even so much what is done to the embryo itself that is the most problematic.
Right.
It is what it does to our perceptions of the importance of being human. See, I think these issues raise a really crucial question for the 21st century. And the way we answer this question will, I think, determine how the morality of the 21st century proceeds. Does human life have any intrinsic value simply and merely because it is human?
All right. Well, accepting your position as valid and the correct one to take in this situation, what do you or other people who feel as you do believe ought to be the fate of these hundreds of thousands of frozen embryos?
Another tough question. I don't have the feeling about the frozen embryos that I do about cloning.
Okay, yeah, no, I understand that. We're going to get back to the cloning.
Right, I think all cloning should be outlawed. I certainly
right.
do not think that IVF should be outlawed. You know, these embryos exist in excess of 400,000.
Right.
Because the people involved in vitro fertilization treatment did precisely what we were told they would not do back in 1980. That is, they made way excess embryos over what would be needed,
right.
and now are deciding that they can be used as mere instrumentalities. People who were worried about IVF in those days, and I was not involved in these issues, but I've read those arguments
right.
from the past, said, you know, this could lead us to just casting these embryos aside as if they were no more valuable than caviar, and that is precisely where we are heading now. It strikes me that I think President Bush's position is the proper one. That is, embryonic stem cell research, because this is a matter of real split opinion in the country, should remain legal, but it should not be federally funded in the sense of destroying embryos for the embryonic stem cell research. I think President Bush hit just the right note on that. I know that some, like the Catholic Church, disagree, but I can accept what President Bush did.
So are you saying that if private funds are used and not federal funds, that it's okay to use those?
I don't think it's okay, but I don't think I'm a dictator.
Right.
And so I am not, and I don't know of any federal attempt to outlaw this research.
There are state attempts that have succeeded, haven't
there? There are about three states that, I think three or four, that have outlawed embryonic stem cell research. Germany doesn't permit any embryo destruction in research. I certainly respect and support those laws if that's what the state wished to pass, but I don't think that nationally that there is the popular support for that kind of law.
So do you have a view on the DeJet Castle bill that's apparently coming up for debate tomorrow?
Yes, I think it should be defeated because President Bush's funding policy is in compliance with federal law called the Dickey Amendment,
right,
which prevents the federal funding of any destructive embryo research for any purpose.
Right.
And so President Bush's compromise, which only permitted embryonic stem cell research to be funded on existing stem cell lines, was in compliance with the law. That Dickey Amendment was why President Clinton never funded embryonic stem cell research.
Right. No, I read a lot about the Dickey Amendment, both its letter and its spirit, in another paper that was produced by the President Council on Bioethics, Alternative Sources of Pluripotent Cells, that
right.
just came out this month. Have you read that?
I haven't read it. I know generally what's in it, but I have it, but I haven't had a chance to read it thoroughly yet.
Do you have any? It's very well written. Do you have any thoughts on the general concept of using alternative methods to get these embryonic stem cells? And in particular, do you feel that Professor Hurlburt's plans for creating biological artifacts is even more monstrous than anybody can consider the current proposals?
No, because what I have to say, as a matter of disclosure, Bill Hurlburt is a good friend of mine.
Okay, well, you can say that. And how do you feel about his
alternative? What Bill wants to do is see if, and he believes, and he's really, in the last year, I mean, the man has poured his heart out into this project. He wants to see whether or not, if you made some genetic changes to the somatic cell used in the nuclear transfer process, meaning the body cell,
right,
that you could make it so that if you did this transfer process, no embryo would ever be created but merely a stem cell line. In other words, you would not be creating a new human life to destroy it. There would literally only be created cells, a cell line, not an organism that...
Well, are you saying not only is he your friend, but that you accept that reasoning?
If it can be done scientifically.
Do you think it can?
A lot of scientists seem to, and so what I would like to see happen is the testing in the animal models.
Okay, because the argument adduced against it in the white paper is that it's essentially creating not a line of stem cells without an embryo, but a deformed embryo, an essentially deformed embryo.
Well, that and Bill Hurlbut, I can tell you,
right,
would not support going forward with such a project if that is in fact what happened.
And some of the opponents even argue that the programming that would make it not a viable embryo needn't manifest themselves in the first few days, but could manifest it at a fetal stage.
What I find fascinating,
yes,
is that some of the opponents of the what Bill calls the altered nuclear transfer,
right,
ant proposal,
right,
support somatic cell nuclear transfer. So on one hand, they support human cloning, which unquestionably creates an embryo to be destroyed. On the other hand, they say somehow Bill is wrong because his might create a disabled embryo for use in this process, which is just bizarre to me. What Bill Hurlbut wants, and what I would support, is if the altered nuclear transfer did not create an embryo but merely created a mound of cells, meaning it was not an organism per se, there would be nothing wrong with going forward with that. But the only way to know whether that would happen is to do animal testing, which is what I think the next step would be.
Do you believe, or apparently you don't, that that's just kind of a semantic trick?
No, I don't, because I know Bill, and I know that's not what he's after. And I know that there's been a lot of very serious discussions by people, not only people at the highest, at very high levels of religious belief,
right,
but also in levels of science, scientific expertise, and so forth. I know explicitly that is not what the game Bill is playing, because
okay,
he's not playing a game and he wouldn't do that.
So you're saying that something enough like life to produce healthy stem cells could at the same time not be life, because it would not have essentially the difference between pluripotent cells and totipotent cells that have everything they need to become an organism, and a mass of pluripotent cells that has everything it needs to become any kind of cell but not an organism. You're saying that the dividing line between life that's entitled to all its protections and non-life, which isn't, could be defined at that biochemical difference. Are you saying that?
I'm saying if what Bill hopes to accomplish can be done, it sounds like a plan to me.
Okay.
But again, I don't have the scientific expertise to know whether that could actually be accomplished.
Right.
And that's why, you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with going forward with animal studies to see whether or not it could. And Bill would be the first one to say that if it turned out that the attempt at altered nuclear transfer actually created an embryo, even a defective embryo, he would not wish to proceed.
And so he would distinguish between a defective embryo and a non-embryo that,
yes,
had the capacity to produce stem cells.
Yes, I believe,
okay,
he would.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up by focusing on what you believe the impact on this whole debate will be of the fact that Dr. Hwang's Woo-Suk's lab in Seoul has essentially leapfrogged, it seems to me anyway, the debate over using excess in vitro fertilized eggs.
Oh yeah, debate is actually obsolete and has been for some time.
Right, because that was a plan to sort of get the tools to do somatic cell nuclear transfer properly, right?
Well, what that was a wedge issue, an entry, the nose, camel's nose under the tent, if
right,
you will, to get people to accept the idea of using embryonic stem cells for research.
Right.
The idea that the scientists are even going to remain in the petri dish,
right,
with early embryos isn't true. New Jersey, for example, has already legalized human somatic cell nuclear transfer implantation and gestation through the ninth month. Other state legislatures...
Is anyone going ahead there on that?
No, they can't do it yet. They can't do it yet technologically. But there's a reason why that kind of broad radical cloning license has been created.
Well, let me ask you, when you say they can't do it technologically,
yeah.
If we focus on what Dr. Huang has done in his lab, and going back to the obvious and frequently reiterated point that you've made, that there's only one kind of cloning, and the distinction occurs after, whether it's used for biomedical research or for making children. Let's say for example, already Dr. Wang is talking to Ian Wilmot, the person who created Dolly, and Dr. Wilmot has a patient who has motor neuron disease, and as reported yesterday...
Motor neuron disease, by the way, is what the Brits call Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right. Okay, good. And that he has an even more difficult to pronounce name
yeah,
as well beyond that.
Yeah, ALS.
ALS.
Yeah.
So Dr. Wang has said to Dr. Wilmot, by the way, Dr. Wang is a doctor of veterinary medicine.
Really? I didn't know that.
DMV, as far as I could see. And so he said, send me a skin cell from your from the patient who's dying of... motor neuron disease, and I'll clone it for you and send it back to Scotland, to the Roslin Institute, and you can work on shepherding it and do further research on it. So my question is, though, if Dr. Wang has another friend who's a dying billionaire who wants to see himself reincarnated, the technology, obviously, that they've used to upgrade the effectiveness of the number of eggs they need to create the embryo to reach the blastocyst stage, to take out the cell mass and turn it into embryonic stem cells. They've got it up to a pretty high rate now.
I think Wang got it down to 12 eggs per embryo.
That was about right. And so. What's stopping someone from taking that egg and then implanting it?
Well, even though
that embryo and implanting it.
Even though Dr. Huang has been able to create cloned embryos,
right?
That is not the same thing as saying that these cloned embryos would not have significant genetic defects if you tried to gestate them into a live baby.
It's not to say that they would either, is it?
I agree with you. I mean, Dr. Huang himself, in his earlier attempt, after he created the first cloned embryo last year,
right,
said that there really was no difference between what he did and reproductive cloning.
Right.
By the way, now he's gotten talking points from the biotech industry,
right,
and he now says, in complete and 180-degree contradiction to what he said last year,
right,
that these are not embryos. They are constructs.
Right.
They are constructs of nuclear cell transfer. That's because Mr. Huang apparently received a visit from the public relations Gestapo of the big biotech industry. So
there you go.
He changed his tune. But the embryos he created were brought to the stage where they could theoretically be implanted in a womb and theoretically brought to a live birth. Now, if this billionaire had a clone of himself brought to live birth, he would be in for a great disappointment because that infant would not be him.
Well, all right,
maybe
next time when we have more time, we can get into the psychological aspects of that.
Yeah.
But why don't we wrap up by you addressing this issue, though? As I understand it, the principal ethical objection to cloning. Reproductive therapeutic cloning for biomedical research is that innocent life in the form of the embryo is destroyed. Am I right in thinking that? That's the ethical violation that's at issue here, right?
That's one of the articles, but it's also you are reducing human life to a matter of mere manufacture. Reducing it to a commodity,
creating it
for the purpose of destroying.
So you're saying there are other reasons to oppose cloning, not
absolutely,
just that you're creating it to destroy it. Because
as I'm sure you've just anticipated, it's not just a pro-life view, if you will. In fact, there are many opponents.
It's a pro-life plus.
There are many opponents of human cloning that are very happy with abortion rights. Jeremy Rifkin is an example, Todd Gitlin, Judy Nurseegian, who is a major feminist, wrote Our Bodies Ourselves, is an opponent of human cloning. And then if you take a look around the world at how people are reacting to human cloning and countries, it is, according to the United Nations General Assembly, by a 3-to-1 vote margin, cloning is intrinsically in violation of human dignity and the special nature of human life.
So just to carry the discussion to its logical point there, you're saying that what the point I was going to make that you've already, in a sense, leapfrogged over is that cloning for the purposes of creating children does not destroy life, does not create life to destroy it. It creates the clone to create
right,
life.
And
but you're saying that even beyond that, there are other objections to doing
course.
That.
Oh, of course. In fact,
could you enumerate them?
Yeah, creating a child via cloning, you are losing the very idea of unconditional acceptance of the child we receive.
I'm sorry, creating a
baby to have a specific, explicit genome.
Right.
That you have preselected.
You mean a non-random genome?
That's correct. That you have preselected. And this is a eugenics process.
Tell people what eugenics is and why it's why you think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, the eugenics movement in the early 20th century basically stated that there should be a distinction made between the fit and the unfit. That is, they created different categories of human worth. And that idea of saying that human life did not have intrinsic value simply and merely because it is human, but that you had to have certain levels of quality in order to have greater levels of worth, led to tremendous horror. For example, in the United States, we had more than 60,000 people involuntarily sterilized because supposedly we were protecting the human gene pool. Now with cloning and its concomitant spin-off, which will be genetic engineering.
And germline modification.
And germline modification, we are actually having some advocates presume that we should seize, that we have the wisdom to seize control of human evolution and alter ourselves to have what would supposedly be a better human species.
These are only people who do believe that human evolution is a fact, is that right?
Well, I don't know about that, but they certainly believe that they have the wisdom to decide which human attributes are better than other human attributes, and that they can, as a consequence, decide how to alter the germline.
You're not saying that we're in an environment where no one is setting themselves up to say that certain human traits are better than others. For example, the ability to score well on standardized tests, run fast, be friendly, or otherwise succeed.
Of course, we always make those kinds of judgments.
Right.
But we don't change the genome and the human species to instill them in our genetics, because you know what. Let's just take a look, for example, at Marilyn Monroe,
right,
which is showing how old I am. When I was growing up, Marilyn Monroe was considered the epitome of female beauty.
That's right.
And today, if you take a look, if you see a movie of her today, she looks like she's 20 pounds overweight.
That's right, because styles have changed.
Styles change. So what if you could have, in the 1950s, genetically altered your daughter so she would be voluptuous like Marilyn Monroe? Then today, she'd be all upset because she had hips.
Right.
You know, these things change. When you decide...
On the other hand, if it turns out that being able to breathe air contaminated with high levels of particulate matter is something that ends up killing off a lot of people because they can't, and if it's possible, say, for example, to engineer that in 9 months, wouldn't that be adaptive rather than non-adaptive?
Good grief. I'm getting a headache. I'm just worried about whether or not we're going to turn human life into a commodity, into a crop to be harvested, whether or not we're going to accept the idea that we should improve our progeny genetically,
right,
for intelligence, for beauty, for sports ability, and
right,
for these kinds of things. You know, we are the species that created the unsinkable ship Titanic.
Right.
And we need a little humility here before we start messing with human nature at the molecular level.
Okay, let me close again with one other moral ethical question for someone who understands it and could give a proper answer. One of the arguments adduced in favor of human cloning, adduced ad infinitum in such things as the campaign for Prop 71, or that even if there's something vaguely wrong with cloning, that it's being done for a higher good, namely the alleviation of human suffering. And this is an argument put forward by most of the proponents of the process. And it's argued that it's intrinsically wrong to destroy human life, and that to do so in the name of any higher purpose is an insufficient argument.
Well,
is that a fair characterization
there,
of the different sides here?
Ends justifies the means,
right? Exactly.
Kind of
right.
argument.
And
I would point out that the ends become the means.
Okay.
Or the means become the ends.
All right. Keep that in mind as I give you the this other example.
Yeah.
It's argued by some people, and I'm not saying whether they're in the same group as the people who argue against the. What I guess you call the biotechnology industry's argument that there's a higher good being served.
Yeah.
This involves the destruction of a what you called a nascent human life.
Right.
Let's take a case of a whatever the opposite of nascent is, a actualized human life in the form of an 18, 19, or 20-year-old soldier,
right,
who risks his or her life in, say, Iraq, in the defense of what, or in the furtherance of what the same president who says cloning is bad, is the spreading of human liberty.
Right.
And my guess is that the people who say it's appropriate and right to send people to Iraq to fight and possibly die, it's wrong for them to die. Nobody says they like that. But they say it's acceptable because it's being done in the furtherance of a higher good, namely the spreading of liberty, and in fact the ability to preserve the attitudes that also protect nascent human life in the embryonic stage. Do you think these are equivalent arguments? And if it's an acceptable argument to say that a 19-year-old living human can sacrifice his or her life for the higher good of defending the country or spreading freedom or doing those things, that it's not right to say that an embryo can give its life for a higher good, namely reducing human suffering, which at some level seems to be the point of spreading democracy.
Now, I don't think those are comparable.
Okay, how so?
I mean,
we
the issue of the soldier, for example, going to Iraq.
Right.
The soldier is a person who made a decision to join the army, and knew that by joining the army, there was a chance that he would go into combat.
Oh, you're saying it's an act of free will?
Well, in the soldier situation, it was certainly.
Well, let's take it back to Vietnam, where a lot of people were drafted into the army in the defense of freedom against their will.
Yeah, and that's
what does that do to the argument?
What that did was it blew up support for the Vietnam War,
right,
and ended the draft.
That's right. That's right.
We can bring in a lot of different issues. You can bring in the death penalty, which
right.
I don't comment on. You can bring in military issues, which I don't comment on, whether
right.
we should be pacifist
right.
or not.
But
those are beyond my pay scale.
Right, I understand.
I can say with regard to human cloning.
Right.
You are doing something that is perhaps the most dramatic and potentially impactful, and not necessarily for the good.
So you're pretty much aligned with Jeremy Rifkin on this, aren't you? On the reason why
I'm
you ought not to do it?
I'm aligned with Jeremy Rifkin. I'm not aligned with Jeremy Rifkin on things like genetically altered food. See, what matters is whether human life is deemed to have intrinsic moral value simply and merely because it is human. I believe in the philosophy of human exceptionalism because I think it is essential to human liberty. That is, unless each and every human is deemed to have intrinsic value, then...
Well, sure, accepting that, but how does that undermine the argument that there's no difference between the sacrifice of a human life for a higher good?
You're not using a soldier as an instrumentality, as a natural resource. Now, some who are anti-war might argue that you are,
yeah.
but I would argue that you're not. But you are not saying that this soldier has to die, by the way.
No. you hope he doesn't.
That's correct.
But there's a finite and increased likelihood that he will, and when he does, if he does, the family is comforted on the grounds that he died not in vain, but in the furtherance of a more important goal than his own individual life.
That's true, and that's the idea of being a warrior.
Oh,
a warrior lives for people other than himself, and serves a code of honor and so forth. When you're dealing with creating human life for the purpose of destroying it, you are not dealing with a warrior who is a fully human person and is treated as such. You are dealing with reducing the status of human life to something that is a mere instrumentality, a natural resource, or a crop.
Okay.
And by the way, it's not going to stay in the petri dish, as I said before. These eventually, I'm convinced, because of what I'm seeing argued in the literature and things like that New Jersey law, if we ever develop, for example, an artificial womb that can bring these cloned embryos to stay along for 4 months, we'll hear the same arguments from the biotech people. Well, we should be allowed to keep these for 4 months because it'll help us study human genetic makeup. It'll help us understand development. It'll help us treat diseases. We can test drugs instead of on animals and so forth. You know, how far are we going to take this out? How far are we going to say that a human life can be deemed a thing?
Let me wrap it up with giving you one last moral conundrum here to deal with. I was reading an article written by a Korean Christian in Brazil who was doing a gloss on the etymological origins of various words in Korean, and he took as his epigram a line from John in the New Testament where he says that to give up your own life for others is the highest form of love.
Right.
That is a basic Christian principle as embodied in the act of the founder of the religion himself, imagine, isn't it?
And the relevance of that is?
The relevance of that is a soldier gives up his life for his fellows, and in the case we're talking about here, an embryo gives up its life, potentially, for the benefit of its fellows. And I'm wondering how this isn't justified by the Christian apologetics here.
The embryo isn't giving up anything. It's being taken.
It's giving up... there's no free will.
The embryo is you know, doesn't have the ability to engage in free will.
And does that prevent it from being human? Is it able to be distinctively human even though it has no free will?
Biologically, it is human. Absolutely.
Biologically, it's human.
Yeah.
Is it theologically human without free will? Doesn't it have to have free will?
Now you're really getting me above my pay grade.
Okay.
I don't believe that we should distinguish between... what you're talking about is something called personhood theory,
okay,
in which a human is given moral value depending on its cognitive capacities. And the argument is, well, we can destroy these embryos because they are not conscious, which is absolutely true. And the same argument could be stated, we could also destroy fetuses since they're not conscious. But does that also mean we could then harvest people like Terri Schiavo for her organs because she's not supposedly not conscious? Well, guess what? Many in bioethics say absolutely. Because when you start turning some human lives into instrumentalities and commodities, it doesn't stay at a very narrow span. It begins to expand because you've changed your own mindset about whether or not human life has importance merely because it is human. And when you start saying no to one category of human life, you then pretty soon expand and spill over into other categories of human life.
So it's the slippery slope.
And it's already happening. You see advocacy at the highest level of bioethics in medical transplant medicine to change the definition of death to include a diagnosis of persistent vegetative state. So I don't think we can go around making these subjective determinations about whether this is truly human because it has he or she or whatever has free will or not. I think we have to be very careful not to create arguments that are not real arguments but justifiers for what we want to do. In other words, some people have decided this is where I want to go to. Now, what arguments can I come up with to allow me to do that?
All right. Well, and are those people called bioethicists?
Quite often.
Why don't you wrap up by talking about whether you believe that bioethics itself is a construct designed by the biotech industry to further its own aims, or whether there are some absolute principles of bioethics that you could subscribe to, that everyone could subscribe to, or whether you think it's just another modality of domination.
Well, bioethics, And again, there are different bioethicists who believe different things.
Right.
Leon Kass, who's the head of the President's Council on Bioethics,
right,
accepts the concept that human life has dignity simply because it's human. That's why he is under such vicious attack by the mainstream view in bioethics. People who inhabit the bioethics chairs in the academies.
Right. So you're saying there's strong controversies within the bioethics.
Right. Bioethics actually has no firm principles. It is based on the idea of bioethical thinking, and bioethical analysis is based on four primary what are called principles, but they're not really principles. One is autonomy. The second is beneficence. The third is non-maleficence, meaning you don't do bad things.
Right.
And the fourth is distributive justice.
Right.
But those are not those are nice in and of themselves, and we could support all of them. But they're not grounded in anything bedrock. For example, if you grounded those principles in the bedrock idea of how do we best promote intrinsic human equality, then you could use those principles to come up with some reasoned and principled decisions. But they're not based in that because bioethics denies the idea that human life has intrinsic value simply and merely because it's human. So that in that sense, these become free floaters and become what in law we would call hooks upon which a judge can hang his hat. In other words, you know what you want to do, and if autonomy gets you there, for example, assisted suicide, oh, well, autonomy rules. But if you if somebody wants to live that you think shouldn't be alive, then you might say, well, we'll deny them medical treatment based on distributive justice.
So you're saying that bioethics is a very ad hoc system.
It's an ad hoc relativistic system that really is diminishing the importance of human life and is trying to destroy human exceptionalism.
All right. Maybe next time we'll deal about with the bedrock principles upon which you believe those principles are derived.
Yeah, and I wrote a book called Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, about the problems with modern bioethics. And in terms of biotech, bioethics has become a handmaiden to the idea of big biotech. In fact, there's even arguments that these biotech companies should hire committees of bioethicists to give them their stamp of approval for experiments.
So, in fact, this all just leads to what we could call big bioethics.
Absolutely. And, in fact, some of the traditional bioethics pioneers are aghast that the movement is becoming for sale.
But you can imagine, of course, that bioethicists would be avid to sell their services to big biotech, wouldn't they?
And sure, there's money in them, Mar Hills.
All right. Well, we're going to... I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today on Utopia Media Medical News Network. This is an issue that's a set of issues that's not going away, and hopefully you'll continue your work. We'll have more to talk about in the future, and I hope we can do so.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Bye.